Hello, Ares, and a few Chiron and Ares folks who are picking up this portion of the reading from the Chiron Return side. Welcome, my name is Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so, here to talk about events involving the sign Aries and a bit about Chiron in Aries in this portion of the reading as well, and a general look around the houses from the standpoint of the sign without which there would not be any beginnings. Aries is where it all starts. It is, as Alice Bailey says, the ignition key of the cosmos, at least from the human standpoint. And in this time of so much important activity in Aries, the human race is having a heck of a time with things right now. Things have been pretty wild since Chiron arrived in Aries in 2018. Prior to that, around the time that Trump got elected, was a series of Uranus conjunct Eris aspects. I believe that was in surrounding 2016. And so there has just been one huge event centered in Aries after the next. And long ago, maybe around 20, well, quite a long time, actually, writing a project I did in the winter of 2006 to 2007, had identified Eris and Aries as being associated with all of this incredible destabilization of identity that we take for granted. You know, we just think, oh, that's how things are, and you know, pay homage to those going through some form of an identity crisis. The reality is that the world is just being upended, and what is being upended by is digital technology. And most of what I see that filtering through is Aries. This is just through long study of what happens when there are major events in Aries, particularly involving Eris and Uranus and Chiron. There is just this kind of broad scale kind of detachment from reality that can happen, and things that seemed to be stable going into such times can become incredibly unstable, and it's not easy to live in the midst of this. And as someone who is strongly oriented on Aries, whether it's your sun, your moon, your rising sign, or some other collection of forces, this is affecting you, and it's been affecting you for a long time. Certainly, in the most immediate sense, back to March 11th, 2011, when Uranus entered Aries, and a lot changed in the world. If you remember 2011, that wonderful year, that was a big shift. For everyone, particularly Sun and Rising Aries, and it's just built up and up and up and up, and things have done nothing but accelerate. And what we get now with Chiron in Aries is a couple of possibilities which stem from the, let's say, classical understanding of what Chiron does as a planetary point, which is it can become a kind of a focal lens to see yourself and your reality through, without being so disoriented. It is just that the commitment to doing this is the commitment to healing, and the commitment to healing is more than most people can offer, and the desire for healing is more than most people can really bring themselves to want. And that is something I don't think that you can really afford. It is not in your best interest to set that aside. Once Chiron has arrived in your sign, the cleanup work has begun. And usually when Chiron arrives, there has been a long delay leading up to that work. And the good part is that the process of healing, of repair, of straightening out the problems of the past begins with self-awareness. It begins with tuning into yourself, your experience, your reality, your ideas about your reality, and then to a large extent your relationships. And there's some beautiful information coming through about that. So I'm going to put that right on hold, right for when I get to a transition point in describing the influence of Chiron. So the effect of all of this digital technology that has been rising, in fact, as a tide that is just unstoppable and in many ways unescapable since about 1980, and which was noticeable in the late 1990s as every home started to have a computer. And then I think around 2011, another interesting thing happened that year when the iPhone was introduced, is that people's sense of who they are has been fragmenting. It has been completely falling apart. And it is not easy for a relationship, for a person, for a society, for a company to stay together when the people involved are falling apart. And it's not easy for you to run your life, to organize your life, to make the most of your very brief quantum of time that you get to be on this planet while you are unraveling. And Chiron is here to help. Chiron becomes, I described it as a focal point or a foothold or a grommet that you can snap your awareness into. But it's going to require awareness. It requires being willing to see what you were not seeing previously. And that is not necessarily so appealing in a time when most people are dealing with their problems and with the challenges of our world and the challenges of our world that confront them with denial, by pretending something isn't true, by unfriending and deleting people who don't, quote, agree with them, unquote. And also sidelining, escaping, attempting to, evade, elude, and eschew anything that calls forth self-awareness, which would lead to integrity. And so let's be real about this. The presence of Chiron in your sign, along with other forces, but especially Chiron in your sign, is calling on you to go completely contrary to the prevailing environment, to the prevailing direction of the culture. And the way that I would sum up the prevailing quality of the culture is right now, as far as I can see, the very worst of toxic Aquarius, which is this obsession with conformity and all of these false concepts of community, false concepts of what it means to be a good person, false concepts of what it means to look out for your neighbor. And these things are all going unquestioned by the vast majority of people that I can see. And I'm surrounded by a fair number of people who are questioning what they are being told, except that I can see like 100 times more than that who are just not ready to question. And what happens when Chiron shows up in your chart, no matter where it is, if your Aries identified, particularly sun, rising, and moon, your whole energy field is going to be, in a sense, shocked into awakening. And what then happens is you get to respond, you get to exercise that option, and respond incrementally, not all at once. Or what happens is the calling to do so, the urgency of the messages, the nature of the issues that will arrive becomes increasingly more urgent and more complex. And the sooner that you're able to respond, the more elegant and simple the solutions can be. But it's when things begin to compound that the chaos, the entropy increases, and therefore the amount of energy required to sort things out and get a handle on things increases, or can lead to a complete collapse. And so of whatever it might be. And so the necessity, the challenge, is to get the message early on and take action immediately. And again, I realize that everyone lives like they are going to live 1,000 lifetimes. This is not an ordinary lifetime for anyone. This is an extraordinary, urgent lifetime for everyone individually. And then also at this phase of history, there is a crux point where we are deciding for the entire future which way the human race will go. And so I think it is necessary, part of the message of Chiron is transcending linear time and looking out at the possibilities of what I guess maybe Seth called probability fields or probable futures, and understanding that by your choices, you are shifting your personal trajectory and contributing to shifting the trajectory of humanity into a different probable future. And I recognize that there certainly seems to be a very high level of responsibility placed on all of us right now, though I don't see any easy way to evade this. And why, you know, why would someone want to with the opportunity so strong? Now, the challenge among many is focusing your healing path, focusing your self-actualization and awakening path, and understanding where you're going to get the help that you need. And that is not easy with so many people who were previously understood to be wise teachers, themselves having been swallowed by this chaos monster and thrown into personal and philosophical disarray. So I'm recording this on the 22nd, and this week we're approaching a series of events in Aries that are just so interesting, and there are two. There are two that happen over about the next maybe 6 to 8 days, so early on in the sun's journey through Aries and setting the tone for the year ahead. And one of them is that on the 26th, there is a triple conjunction of the sun, Venus, and Salacia. talked about Stellatia a year ago, wrote an article about it. We can include access to tomorrow's essay about the Sun, Venus, Stellatia. That's the 23rd, the essay on the 23rd, which I have mostly written, where I unpack this aspect. What is unusual is that the Sun-Venus conjunction happens, this particular version of it happens about every 18 months, and it dances all over the zodiac, and even when it happens in Aries, it's dancing all over Aries, and so it's it is special wherever it happens, because the chances are very unlikely that it will happen in any one place, but that's the place where it's happening, and it happens that the place where it's happening is in an exact conjunction to Stellatia. And what Stellatia is about is the process of sexual and emotional maturity, but the emotional part of that sexual and emotional is about sexual immunity, immaturity, immunity. And this is an essential part of the self-becoming process. There was a series of Chiron-Stellatia conjunctions that I think took place in throughout 2020 and very early 21, which have focused this theme of maturity as healing. But what you'll see, I think, if you choose to study the question, which can include looking at people around you, looking at your own life, looking at your parents, your children, your siblings, and your friends, and then also looking at the world at large, is that part of the chaos that we are in is a failure of maturity. And it's partly a failure of a model of maturity. There really is no coherent concept of maturity. And then also, because sexual growth is so inherent to any legitimate form of self-actualization, any form of genuine self-becoming, and the sexual topic is so taboo that this is left out. This piece is left out. And When it is left out, there really is very little progress that can be made, because this thing that is so central to, first of all, the creation of a human being and the inherent nature of consciousness, whether we think of the inherent nature of consciousness as being about species level survival or passing on one's genes to one's progeny, or a form of individual survival, getting what you want. Sex is an integral part of all of this. And when that is taken out of the equation, when that has been made taboo, and make no mistake, it has been made taboo by religion, which has done so for the purpose of thwarting the progress of humanity, and for also essentially feathering its own nest by making anything that feels good a sin for which one needs repentance and therefore the repentance of religion. So it's the perfect self, product that drives its own need and becomes kind of a thing with a lot of momentum. It is not so easy to think your way out of this, but it is a lot easier to make a choice to embark on the journey and to take each successive step at a time, remembering that the thing being transacted within yourself is always basically a question of curiosity versus numbness. That is the alive, dead paradigm, is one is either curious or anesthetized. And to be curious and to not be anesthetized with that is going to come a lot of potentially controversial feeling, old things coming up for healing, and that is the nature of Chiron. He used to say, at Miracle Manor, love brings up everything unlike itself. And I would say, it is fair to say in this conversation, that Chiron brings up everything unlike itself. Now, this is all going on in the kind of, well, approximately degrees 5 through 10 of Aries. So right in the end of the first decanate, right? Degrees 5 through 10. If you don't have astrological literacy, doesn't really mean that much. It means a little more. It's just like the address. We're essentially looking at 1/6 to 1/3 of the way through through the sign. More influential the earlier in Aries that your birthday is. And in this degree range right now, in the opposite sign to Aries, is a point called Logos. So Logos is a tremendously important concept because it is the thing that underlies the ability of people to communicate in language and to understand one another, essentially the ability to reason. And what is implied by this very close opposition, again, you know, almost against all odds, it's just it's happening, is almost kind of a quantum miracle. Something has to happen, right? So this is the thing that is happening. So you say, well, there's 100% chance of this thing having happened, but it's also very long odds. Logos is saying to me that you need people in your life to whom your healing process makes sense. And so first, your healing process has to make sense to you at least as an idea, at least as a commitment, at least as an understanding. And I would suggest that you have a talk with yourself and decide if you're ready to commit in principle to a sexual healing process being part of that, the purpose of the sexual healing process being to help you mature holistically overall, you know, not just, you know, not just to be a better lover or Don Juan, but that's kind of like a, you know, long after effect of this. The concept is much more central to your well-being than it is about having a good time, though having a good time is good. But when you get into a healing process, you may find that all of the glamour and the glitz and the you know, the things we're told are the legit version of the good time from a cultural standpoint are not the things that you are finding, and then they are not the things that you are interested in. But rather that you end up on a kind of biophilic path, a magnetism to the integrity of life, on a journey of becoming a whole person and of healing these things that have held you back for so long. And to do that, it becomes necessary fairly soon, perhaps immediately, to be able to have the conversation that you need to have with people. Those are the people who become your healing partners, the ones who are beyond any judgment. First of all, first essential quality of the healer. Second, the heal, whether it's a friend, a relative, a loved one, a mother, a father, sister, brother, dog, cat, whatever, whoever, healer, therapist, whoever it might be, the lack of judgment is the most important thing. Togs being particularly good at this, but not good at the rest of what I'm going to say. And then to be able to engage in a reasoning process of understanding what is important, what the priorities that you have are, what is a necessity, where you must find your understanding. This is all what comes through Logos. And the essential piece about Logos is doing something that is very hard with people, no matter what dimension of healing we're talking about, which is articulating in words what is troubling you. And that articulation in words is particularly difficult right now because we're moving into this whole symbolic, metaphorical, visually oriented society that gets around the point all the time. It does not have to commit in words. And so it can feel really deep to have to say, well, this is what I think is troubling me now, because there's a lot of gravity in the in this kind of like very ethereal light environment where we're in, where people can change their tune in 20 seconds and in many ways delete their entire identity, considering that most of life is lived online, and it's possible to just basically reincarnate as another person in a matter of a day. You can get all new social media accounts, you can get a whole new email address, you can even dump a website. People who do this often haven't established the reality of who they are online, so it's very easy to morph and morph and morph. In that environment where people are constantly morphing, where there is no stability of self, to be able to say, okay, I acknowledge I've got this thing going on. I acknowledge I need to work on this problem, on this issue, and I need help to do that, and I need to find someone who understands me. And then, most important, do the work of building that trust and that understanding, which can take years. As an Aries, you might say it would take 2 years. It would take one cycle of Mars. This in our time really takes a lot of commitment. It certainly would have taken commitment in 1970, when there were all kinds of fantastic psychotherapists working, which is not the case. There are very few today, and they're not really a thing. Most people are not that interested in getting what you get from that. So the whole environment is tuned against this, and you, it would seem to me, for maximum benefit for your life, maximum healing, maximum use of your time, the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships, need to do this work. And it's going to take building and building trust and building language, what my favorite poet Adrian Rich described as the drive to connect. The dream of a common language does not come by itself. So we have covered some of the territory of what is going on directly in Aries. Let's talk about Mars. Mars is the ruling planet of Aries, and it is an exceedingly interesting condition right now. Not easy, but interesting. And it will be good to have the hints and clues that I'm about to offer you. So here's what's going on. Again, Mars is your ruling planet. At the peak of all of this Aries activity, in this, your birthday season, Mars is on the north node of the moon. This, by the way, ends the Kala Sarpa yoga phase, Mars slipping to the occidental of the North Node, ends this long phase we've been through of everything just being so explosive and so loaded with karmic implication, though the peak of that is Mars on the North Node. So it's not like it's over, but it is very much in focus. and will be shifting during during this month of Sun in Aries. Now, so what we have here is Mars on the North Node in Gemini is another way of emphasizing the put it into language issue. By putting it into language, I really mean putting it into language that another person understands. The problem with having things in language that you understand is that you're not necessarily certain whether anyone else understands it, and so the nature of the commitment involved in constructing the words and asserting the ideas is very different. And I know that everyone is having a hard time with this, particularly young people are having a hard time with this, because words just seem so imprecise that you might as well just, you know, splatter the paint on the canvas. But you are looking for a much more precise form of communication than this. And the thing with the establishing those forms of communication is that the conversation might have to go on for a while till you get to the point where you really feel as if you have some grounding. Now, challenge of Mars in Gemini right now is something special going on. Mars is working its way, well, let's see. I'm going to finish that thought and then come back to the thing that just kind of popped into my mind. Mars going through Gemini means that Mars is approaching a square to Neptune. So remember that Mars is your ruling planet. Mars is a significator for you in any form of astrology. It doesn't automatically mean that Mars in the chart is you, but it could certainly be assessed as a significator, like you'd say in tarot. And therefore, what happens to Mars, we can make an assumption, is subject to happening to you. And there are numerous elements of your astrology that are calling for precision of language and the integrity of the whole truth. And what we have with Mars is that over the duration of your solar return season, Mars is going to be entering a long, long square with Neptune. And this is cautionary, first of all, because almost any aspect that happens involving Neptune is going to happen below the line of liminality. It is not going to be so obvious. And in fact, it may be completely invisible, or it may be a thing that is attached to something else that you deny. And so there's a number of, possibilities that describe the challenges noticing the condition of Mars square Neptune. And this is one reason we have astrology. It is not to predict what will happen during Mars square Neptune, but more like to say, okay, there's weather blowing in, and it's going to blow in around this time, and you know the thing might say, well, the tide's doing that, so you've got the combination of the weather and the tide, and then the time of day or night, and that's another thing you can easily look at, and then the conditions of your life. And so there's a lot going on at once. And while much of the guidance in your astrology is calling you toward precise language, Mars square Neptune is about denial and deception and potentially self-destructive. And so this is what you want to be aware of. And so there's this this almost a perfect dichotomy between the need for highly self-aware and descriptive language that is negotiated over time, and then Mars square Neptune, which, you know, on the shadowy side, on the dark side, which is the reality for most people, is the delusion, deception, denial, self-deception. And even on the most positive side, handled affirmatively with full consciousness, can also be about a foggy condition coming over things that makes it seem impossible to find the right words, impossible to actually know where you're coming from. Because you can know where you're coming from, and then it keeps melting. And it's like, wow, that was good a second ago, but now, like, you know, someone left the cake out in the rain, and it's, like, gone. Like, it's not the same anymore. And so you may find yourself, no matter how hard you work, no matter how much focus you bring, kind of keep going back to the first step. And I would say that this is calling for a combination of attempting to state what you think, feel, and have experienced, and at the same time being a little bit circumspect, recognizing that though it may feel like any statement you make has incredible gravitas, like, right, a depth that you can't get out of, and an intenseness and density, that your reality is more fluid than that, and that you can experiment, and that as long as you are tracking yourself, as long as you are aware of what you've said and aware of what you have committed to as truth previously or immediately previously, or, you know, have discovered without having committed to it, that is subject to evolution, that is subject to change, that you are not, despite the sense of gravitas, that you are not wholly committed to what you have said about your reality in the past. And on the most affirmative side of things, the nature of that Mars square Neptune could lead you to take chances that you might not take, to experiment with ideas that you might not have, you know, previously experimented with, and to experiment with states of mind that you have not previously experimented with, including states of mind that would be very tempting to have induced by any form of consciousness changing substance, which could be as, you know, work a day as alcohol or cannabis, or venture out into the realm of the exotic with some form of an entheogenic substance or ayahuasca or something like that. And I would suggest strongly, under the conditions of Mars square Neptune, that if you're going to do this, and I know that, you know, this is clearly not, you know, not in the realm of every one of my clients. I know you pretty well and the diversity with which you approach life. But for those who would consider doing substances, that you might want to stay in microdose territory, and of course, make sure that your experience is set up so that you are not expected in any way to run heavy machinery, such as, you know, chainsaw, automobile, motorcycle, or whatever, and to just be cool. And to make sure that you practice what Timothy Leary said about set and setting, meaning mindset and the place where you choose to experiment, and whether or not this is done with an entheogenic substance, and the temptation will be there because of the square to Neptune. The temptation will be there to escape as well. And I would say with Mars square Neptune, there's a fine line between escaping and seeking enlightenment. And with Gemini in the picture, Mars is in Gemini, all things of that dichotomous nature may be, you know, on the line here. More significantly is telling yourself the truth. And when I say telling yourself the truth, I don't mean like the truth as like the thing written on the fortune cookie, and it's like one thing and you crack it open and that's what it says. By telling yourself the truth, what I mean is, excuse me, a little froggy here, is think of truth as being like north or south. It's a direction. And you don't have to go in that direction. You need to know what that direction is, but of course you may know what north is and go east. But you start your quest for the truth by knowing the direction of travel that truth represents. And by, in a sense, you know, knowing that your compass is pointing toward truth, and then knowing your personal heading, where you are headed. And as you grow, you are going to want to head more closely to the truth. But I'm not talking about truth as a noun, as a thing, as a truth with a capital T. This is my truth. I'm talking about something much more gentle that allows you to move in a way, it's a word that I like to associate with Pisces and with Neptune, which is circumspect, looking at the circle, looking all around the wheel. If you're considering your astrology, consider all 12 houses and all 12 signs. Consider every planet rather than just fixating on one thing. That Neptune is setting you free to be, setting Mars free to be circumspect and to consider the binary options, Gemini, and to go beyond the binary options, to think in terms of the wider set of possibilities that there are. And to keep coming back to recognizing which direction truth is in, and to gently guide yourself back there, and you travel in that direction. What is arriving? Well, especially with Chiron, which is going to be around for quite a while, there's always a new point of arrival. This is a particularly special part of Mars's orbit right now, for several reasons. One involving that it's crossing the North Node, which is bringing to a close for a while, and possibly a very long while, the condition that I have written about a few times called Kala Sarpa Yoga. It'll come up in a search of the Planet Wave site, Kala Sarpa, Sarpa. If I neglect to include it on the resources page, and if I do neglect to include it and want to see it, just write to me, efc@planetwaves.net. Got a lot going on, so I'm grateful that I can be here in quiet mind and doing this for you, but I might not remember that detail. Okay, so thing one, crossing the node, Kala Sarpa Yoga ending, and Mars on the dragon's head. That can be driven. It can be driven, and it can be driven toward false truth. Be cautious. The process of understanding yourself, the process of healing, the process of establishing common language with another person. It's almost always a slow, meticulous, back-and-forth process and requires patience. And we are a culture that wants to download the app and have the thing work. And that is not the human, that is not the human condition, even though we are, I think, being unwittingly pushed in that direction right now. Okay, the other really important thing about the action of Mars right now and the action of the lunar nodes is that another centaur is involved. So there's a number of centaurs. There's really about five that I use. Some, you know, depends on when one shows up in an odd place, but the ones that I use generally are approximately the first five that were discovered, and among them, Nessus is the third of the five discovered in 1993. And Nessus is the centaur of consequences. It is the centaur of what goes around comes around. So the structure of the myth, the cycle of the myth, is one where one thing leads to another, to another, to another, to another. And actions taken very early on can lead to consequences that come back. And so I would say that, though most people would not agree with me, you want some of this to happen. You want to get a flavor of some of the consequences of your previous actions coming back to you, so that you can, first of all, see that this happens, so that you can study the kind of reality map and see what is going on, and to avoid getting into these conditions in the future. To understand that the choices that you make now set things in motion that can have many, many, let's say, dominoes falling before the whole thing comes back to you. And so the more aware of this you are, by far, the better. And what you've got now is Mars on the North Node, square Nessus squaring the nodes. And so what is squaring the nodes has moved from Neptune, deception, delusion, denial, squaring the nodes, the thing that must be dealt with. I didn't say that. The thing that squares the nodes is the thing that must be dealt with. This is true in all forms of astrology. What squares the nodes is on the nodes. And so if the nodes represent the ability to move and process karma and experience, what is square the nodes is the thing that must be passed through, that must be addressed in order to have the nodes working at all. And now for the foreseeable future, and in your solar return chart, which takes us out to another year or more, Nessus is square the lunar nodes, and your ruling planet Mars is square Nessus. Now, this can address actions which you have initiated, but it's also, I think, more likely to be about things that happened to you in the distant past, and things that were passed down ancestrally that happened to other relatives in the distant past, ancestors and predecessors in the distant past, and to be aware of things coming up for healing. And the thing about things coming up for healing is that while Mars and Nessus and the nodes make this really strong, like this aspect is very tight. It's a 1 degree setup. And for a while in there, it's going to be like exact to arc minutes, right? So that's, you know, really quite beautiful. But with Mars square the square Neptune, be like, well, some of that precision can be kind of eroded by preferences or by, you know, like, oh my God, this is all too much. And I say all of this recognizing that we are in a massive make it stop time period right now, where there are people who are willing to do anything to make this relentless strife and chaos and confusion and things just being taken away from us every single day end, to not have that be a thing that we are having to live with. And you have a lot of people taking ways out that are seemingly easy ways out. There are no easy ways out. There are no easy ways out of the situation. There are no easy ways out of this relentless anxiety that we have been put through, and all of the deception that has come along with this. I can tell you that I did not really sleep in 2020, and neither did most of my research partners. We pretty much stayed awake for a year. And when no part of something, when no specific part of something is true, when you've checked every specific part of something, when you've just referenced it and tracked its history, and then you go on to the next one and it's not true, and the next one and it's not true, and the next one and it's not true, the whole thing can't be true. You cannot have a truth built on 1,000 lies. And what I am here to caution you about is that how you mediate this matters. How you work that Mars lunar nodes Nessus configuration, how you hold to the direction of, let's say, magnetic tug known as truth, how you orient on that. Do you orient on that? Are you spinning, spinning, spinning? And I think most important, are you making your choices in a wholly conscious way? Or are you making your choices based on hazy belief is the central question of your life at this time. And what is so special about this moment is that there are so many pitfalls, yet at the same time, there are so many resources and tools available to you to be able to navigate, to be able to embark on your healing process, to be able to find people that you trust and do the work of learning communication with those people, which is further establishment of trust and of understanding. Remembering that it never happens quickly. It just takes time. Trust, understanding, and developing a common language take time, and the orientation on truth can take time, particularly if you are someone who has in the past allowed yourself to be persuaded that there is no such thing, or through chaotic experiences have just begun to wonder whether there is such a thing. But really, in my view, most of the antipathy toward truth, this idea of truth, whether something is real, something actually is knowable, findable, understandable. The opposite of skepticism. Skepticism says you can never know. And what I'm talking about is, well, actually, you can know. But the idea that you can't know, this kind of toxic skepticism, in the classical sense of skepticism, again, not the thinking you can never know, this is a marketing campaign. This has been pushed on us. And with Mars square Neptune, I would say that the most important thing you can do is to stick with reality and know when there's an advertisement or sponsored content playing and be real with yourself. Now, Mars square Neptune is taking place between your third house, where Mars is, that's conscious ideas, language, basic commerce, communication, neighbors, siblings type of thing, and the 12th house, which for you is Pisces, which is the, let's say, the deep realm of all that you are not fully aware of. And in this deep realm right now, there's quite a bit going on. For example, there is the conjunction of Mercury and Pisces. Now, what is interesting is that this is arguing for, Mercury and Neptune in Pisces. And what this is arguing for is the continuous raising of awareness of all that you had not previously considered being mindful and I think this is crucially important, that the line between reality and imagination is going to be very, very thin. And so it is important that you have experiences, that you treat your experiences in a way that leaves you room to reinterpret them, that leaves you room to seek a new understanding, that leaves you room to accept facets of your being about which you may have been in some form of long denial. You will feel better for allowing stuff to the surface, and you will feel better for standing back excuse me, from judgment and jumping to conclusions in our time of, like, we want to get right to the answer very quickly. This is a real failing of our times. And additionally, along with that, the terror of looking within for the answer, as opposed to seeking the answer out in the world in some way, in particular the answer to one's fear, or the answer to one's well-being, can never be sought outside of oneself. The solution is never sourced from the outside. At least the internal awareness must be completely original and about you, as must be the guidance. Again, in this time in history, there is a very high necessity for this thing called due diligence. Okay, let's talk about Aquarius, which is where a lot is happening now. And when I talk about the environment, the prevailing environment, going in the direction of a kind of wildly pervasive social conformity. I mean, if you look everywhere you look, the idea is, you know, let's all get together and do the same thing. Let's all get together and do the right thing. Let's all get together and be a community. But when you peel that back a little bit, you can find out how hollow that is, and also how serving of other interests it is, right? Groups are groups of individuals. It is easy to think that you're an individual, you know, having your own experience in a crowd, and in a sense you are. But when that crowd moves, you're not an individual anymore. You're going with it. If you've ever been in a crowd that starts to stampede, and you realize how terrifying that is, because you know the only thing between you and no longer being alive or being seriously injured is your ability to stand up on your feet. Normally, stumbling is not a big deal, but when you're caught in a crowd that starts to move, you better stay upright or you could get trampled. And that is the condition that we are in now. And I would add that has nothing to do with actual individuality or with actual group consciousness. Group consciousness is something that we know very little about because we're so accustomed to being bullied, pressured, and forced to do things, some way compelled or coerced or something like this, threatened in some way, which is really where we are at in a lot of ways after a year of a constant non-stop threats. There's very little individuality left in how we are responding to this. And you can see all of this in Saturn and Jupiter in Aquarius. When Aquarius is activated like this, you're going to see some kind of an effect on the level of where the individual meets the group. And right now what we are seeing is, admittedly rare as it is to have both Jupiter and Saturn in Aquarius, hasn't happened until since 1962. So that's a heck of a long time. That's almost, how long is that? 50, it's a whole whopping double Saturn cycle right now to have these two planets in Aquarius. things are not going very well for individuals. And the pressure is put on, and at times threats are leveled. And so when I say that Chiron in Aries is making it essential that you honor your individuality and that this is anti-environment, that this is going against the prevailing notion of what it means to be a person, what it means to be part of a community, what it means to be human, and that you are going contrary to this, this is what I'm talking about. And it is very important that we get this right now, because Jupiter and Saturn and Aquarius are just the warm-up. In 2023, Pluto arrives. And where Pluto arrives, there is usually some kind of enforced enforced existence. And so this is all kind of like, you know, doing the pussyfoot in favor, in advance of what happens with Pluto. And so the line where Aquarius is concerned, in a way very similar to where Aries is right now, and there's an unusual relationship between Aries and Aquarius that I've written about at length, is that there's another intervention of technology here. And when we are fully subject to Pluto in Aquarius, that we are going to be much, much more subject to these technocratic intentions. And I don't think there's any debating the point right now that we are in a essentially a global fascist uprising through technology. Everything is now being run through technology. Every thought we share, every appointment we make, every dollar we spend is being run through digital technology. And when Pluto arrives in Aquarius, that is when the hammer might come down in an even bolder and harder way. And every modicum of your humanity, of your individuality, of your freedom that you choose, including the choice to keep your options open. That's a very important choice right now, to take the option that allows you to keep your options open. Most people do not think this way. Most people are more comfortable having fewer options rather than more options. But I would strongly suggest that the thing that you want to do right now is to always have more options when you can do this. And you're getting a choice every day to have more options or fewer options. You want more options, because those options are going to become increasingly precious with each passing month, each passing season, each passing year, until 1 year, 2 years from now, one Mars cycle, 2 years from now in the spring of 2023, when Pluto first touches the edge of Aquarius. And as that happens, as that approaches, you want to preserve all of your options, every option that you keep open, every way that you maintain your freedom a little bit more, even in small ways, counts for a lot and will count for more and more with each passing month and season and year. So if I said that, I'm sorry, I had a glitch with the recording, and I don't know when it stopped and stopped recording what I was saying, because I was thinking about what I was saying and not staring at the screen. So apologies if I have repeated myself. So we are in these very, very serious times, and it is becoming harder and harder to do the thing that we have to do, which is the utter necessity of maintaining our personhood and our individuality. Okay, so now I believe this part was also on when the recorder was on pause, which is that You, as an Aries or Aries rising, you have Capricorn on the 10th house. And that means that, first of all, you have had a tremendous amount of activity in your 10th house. That includes Pluto going back to 2009. It includes Saturn going back to around 2000, late 16 or early 17. It involves the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn in early January of 2020, which has led to all of this mischief that we are living with. And this implies strongly that there has been some shakeup in your professional life. Now, that's not saying all that much, given the fact that the world has been through the, you know, the modern world has been through the single biggest economic shock that it ever has, something akin to nuclear winter or the, you know, neutron bomb going off and just removing the people and, leaving the all the empty offices. And so as you reorient, remember that your career life, your professional life is under the influence of Saturn. That is normally very helpful. The question is what to do with Saturn in Aquarius and Aquarius being such a strong sign in terms of its ability to compel the surrender of one's personhood and one's individuality. With Saturn there, you are in a better position to be able to maintain your individuality in your social and your professional life for a while, because it's only going to last as long as Saturn is there. But you can also learn skills. And so you are in a very good position to be reorienting your skill set into this sort of newly transformed version of the world, this like newly created synthetic economy that's going on. But be aware that almost all of your options are going to be technological options. Almost all of the jobs that are available are essentially going to be jobs that are 100% reliant on the internet. Even if you make something, you're likely to have to transact all of your business on the internet. They have managed to wipe out almost all the farmers markets and yard sales, certainly, and all the certainly on the scale that they were on previously, where people could just buy, sell, and trade using cash. Now this has all been shoved onto the internet, and so what I would recommend is, based on these conditions, is just being aware of how far you want to go with this and deciding where exactly it is that you want to orient yourself in this newly forming economy. And that regardless of what ends up happening with you professionally and vocationally, that you leave yourself lots of room in analog space, first of all, in real space, in space where that's not just all pixels and bits and bytes, and that you also make your choices for what you want to do, keeping in mind the ethics of what you are doing, of who is influenced, of how people are influenced, of what the total flow of money is, where is this coming from, what is the source of this revenue on the ground. What are people actually paying for that is paying you? Because even within the digital realm, there are going to be the more or less ethical choices. And as I keep saying right now, you are at a fulcrum where the choices that you make now can have a seemingly only small influence, but then much further in the future, they can have a very, very large influence, such as imagine a telescope on Earth, an ordinary backyard telescope pointed at a star. If you move that telescope 1 millimeter on Earth at the fulcrum, the place where the telescope meets the tripod, you are moving light years on the other end. And so I would remind you to keep reminding yourself that you are at a fulcrum right now, and that choices are amplified in their power. They're magnified in their power. And the presence, going back to a topic at the beginning of the discussion, of Nessus square the nodes and your ruling planet Mars square Nessus is also indicative of this fulcrum effect where actions have consequences, and they're not necessarily the consequences that you think. We're all being told that there's going to be this and that consequence, and not really doing very much a review of this information. A couple of more thoughts in the remaining time. You have Uranus in your, probably the most important one of all, Uranus in moving through Taurus, your second place. If you're Aries Sun or Aries Rising, same effect. You have Uranus, this planet of revolution and instability, moving through your second place. And this is helpful. It's as helpful as Saturn in Aquarius. I wonder if they're going to make an... They have made one square. Ah, of course, there are two more squares of Saturn and Uranus. And so there is a squeeze going on for you. And there is tension between, what you need to do versus what you think is possible. What you think is the easy route versus what you think is the one where you just need to, invent your way out of the situation. And in case no one's mentioned at any time lately, two of the most important financial houses are House 2 for you, Taurus, and House 11 for you, Aquarius. House 11 is a financial house because it's the second house from the 10th house. So the second from any house, i.e. the next one, is the one that talks about the money pertaining to that thing. And if the 10th is about career, then the 11th is about the money from career. Said properly, the second of the 10th, i.e. the 11th, is the house of finances. And so from your career, not from inheritance, not from, small-time buying and selling and trading, but rather like your chosen vocation. And, you are definitely in this kind of collider. You know, when you have Uranus, the planet of both revolution and false revolution, and Saturn, who is actually in Aquarius, something of a revolutionary in that there is the understood need for incremental progress, like seriously steady incremental progress, not like, throw women the vote in one century, then like, okay, then what happens next? Oh, that was already 100 years ago. I don't mean that kind of incremental. I mean like a steady beat. There is certainly with Uranus square Saturn, a clash involved. And the clash involved is going to keep compelling you to reassess, reevaluate, reinvent over and over and over again. And that is the nature of the inventive process. And remember that you're not inventing a thing. You're not inventing your quote, career and your income is not a thing. Your career and your income are the energetic flow of your existence on the material plane, in material reality, what you make with your hands, what you do with your mind, what you do with your time, and the rewards that you get for these choices and these actions and these experiences. And so this is very, very much on the line right now. And it is fair to say that if you keep an open mind and you are honest with yourself and you are willing to keep going for a duration of time that you don't know how long it's going to be. Like, this is the crucial thing with this kind of astrology is you once you embark on it, you don't know when you will get off the ride. But one thing that you can pretty well know for sure is that you will do the work and you will get there if you stick to it and you stay invested and committed and involved in your being. So I'm going to take a night of rest and come back on Tuesday morning with the Chiron portion of this reading. So if you're like one of those fans who's like right waiting for it to come out, I would say for sure I will have the recording up by Wednesday evening. Okay, thank you for listening. Thank you for your trust and your time. Bye for now. Thank you.